show success.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, incidentally. We're broadcasting live from the future, live from New Zealand, and you on the other side of the dateline. Don't worry, I'm sure you'll catch up eventually, especially if you're accelerated by nuclear particles that happen to be floating in the air, which is unfortunate at the best of times. But, conveniently, this is the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. And we have an extremely special guest lined up for today, ladies and gentlemen. He puts the G in gangster. It's G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, World Without Cancer, The Capitalist Conspiracy, to name but a few of his great works, not to mention producing the great documentary film What in the World Are They Spraying? In which, incidentally, the New Zealand Parliament managed to get a cameo debut into their stupidity and arrogance and cackling away at something which is indeed very serious. So he's a man who knows how to deal with a little bit of criticism based upon telling the truth. And I'd like to welcome him now to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. G. Edward Griffin, welcome.
Thank you, Eddie. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I wanted to know, just at this particular point in time with currently how things are going, I mean, would you like to explain yourself perhaps just a little bit to the audience, just a brief sum up?
Explain myself, you mean where I come from and what my goal in life is and how I spent my summer vacation, stuff like that?
Basically, you've hit the nail on the head.
Well, I got a sense, Vinnie, from listening to your introduction, that you're a man of a great sense of humor, which is good to have in these days when it seems like the world is falling apart around us. So forgive me if I join in with that frivolous note. But anyway, okay, who am I? Well, I'm pretty much what you see is what you get. I'm an old guy now. I was born in 1931. I've been pretty much a serious observer and communicator, writer, and things that I consider to be of great importance to the survival of not only the human race, but the free human race. I don't think there's much, you know, point in surviving if you're going to be in a condition of servitude or slavery, but I've been a serious observer of that for many years, and of course, if you hang around long enough, eventually you manage to accomplish a few things. And so I've got all these books and television documentaries that I've managed to produce over the years. Most of them, Vinnie, relate to political issues, not partisan politics in that sense, but geopolitical issues, social issues, economic issues, and
it's going beyond the small fishbowl vision that we all kind of perceive the world to be, because we don't actually question or back up with research what the opinions that we're given on television tell us to think. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is G. Edward Griffin. We're live from the future. It's the lighter side of genocide at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us there in the chat room, and we'll be right back after the break.
Unity, please don't desert me.
Yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. is business time.
It's business, it's business time.
That's what you mean, it's business time. Oh.
It's business, it's business time.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the show that's all about business time. Broadcasting live from the future, from the fabulous fluoride head capital of Auckland, New Zealand. And our very special guest, G. Edward Griffin, joins us for 2 hours today, and so immensely grateful. I can't believe it. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. So where were we? We were talking about the difference between politics with a capital P and with a lowercase p, I guess.
Yeah. Well, poly meaning many, and ticks meaning blood-sucking insect.
But so when I say I'm interested in political issues, I don't mean issues like who you're going to vote for. That's so far down the scale. By the time you get to, as you I'm sure know this, Vinny, by the time you get to the issue of who you're going to vote for, all the decisions have been made. All the real important decisions have been made. The candidates have been selected, and you're just being given a choice between a couple of candidates which have been thoroughly filtered. And usually, at least here in our country, it makes very little difference which candidates you choose because they both are beholden pretty much to the same power brokers.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're like the little ghosts that they send out to do their bidding or kind of thing. Who are you going to call?
Yeah, who are you going to call? Who are you going to vote for? And, under those conditions, it seems like, especially today, people aren't voting for anybody. They're voting against somebody. They say, I really hate the guy that's in office now. He's so bad. I don't care who you vote for. Anybody's got to be better than that. That's the mentality. So they don't really know what they're getting. All they know is they hate what they got. And that's the mentality that I've been fighting against all my my mature life and trying to, pump some information and sunshine into these people so they'll start to wake up and realize that there are principles involved here. It's not the people. It's the principles that they represent. So anyway, that's sort of a half-baked description of what I do. I try and stir the pot. I try and get people to think. And once in a while, when you're stirring things around, you stir up a hornet's nest. And so I've been chased by a few bees, but that's okay.
So what's the buzz from the bees these days?
Yeah, right.
I mean, well, we've got these simultaneous crises, I keep saying. We've got the tsunamis, the earthquakes in New Zealand, and we've got the nuclear crisis, the economic crisis. We've got the food shortage crisis. We've got the oil price crisis. We've got the everything crisis, basically.
Right.
And I always think that when huge things are happening globally and they're all happening simultaneously, I usually am suspicious that there is a coordinated effort going on here. And if there was a coordinated effort behind many large worldwide simultaneous crises, who would want something like that? And more to the point, why would they be doing it? What are they trying to get out of this?
Well, precisely. Those are the kinds of questions I think more people need to be asking. There's no doubt about it when you start reading the literature that is put out by some of the biggest movers and shakers in the world. And by that I mean organizational movers and shakers. Here in the States, we have an organization called the Council on Foreign Relations, and it's a relatively small group of people, only about 4,000 people belong to it. But those individuals are in the power centers of this country. In fact, many have called that the hidden government or the hidden rulers of America. And it's really not a bad description, because these people are really in the saddle. You find an inordinately high percentage of presidents of the United States who are members of this group, vice presidents, candidates for every important office you can think of, Supreme Court justices, senators, congressmen, heads of universities, heads of the great media centers, ABC, CBS, NBC, and just go on down the line, labor unions, church organizations, all the power centers of society, which really determine the way the nation will go, are dominated by people from this one little organization. And this is no accident. You'd have to be a fool to say, well, my goodness, look how the chips fell on that one. No, these people know that the human being is sort of a herd animal. He has this herd instinct. He goes into groups, and he aligns himself with organizations, and he follows leaders. So the whole trick there, if you want to control a nation without the nation really being too much aware that it is being controlled, what you do is you try and capture control of these power centers of society at the top. Yeah, and then the masses that belong, the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, the labor unions, and so forth, they just go along with whatever their leaders say. And they don't realize that those people at the top all have somewhat of a common agenda. So that's why I say by the time you get to vote for a candidate, the important decisions have been made. And I kind of wandered from my track there. The point is that these people, when you read the literature that they publish for themselves, write the books that they've written in their younger days, and so forth, you find that they're very aware of this need to direct the masses. And in fact, there's one very interesting book was published by a college professor here in the United States by the name of Carol Quigley. It's called... I have to stop and think for a moment of it. Carol Quigley, by the way, was the professor who taught political science and history to our President Clinton when he was a student at Georgetown University.
Yeah,
and
I've heard
the book
name.
Is called Tragedy and Hope.
And it's yes.
Yeah, it's a big, thick book. And in there, as, first of all, Professor Quigley is very, very supportive of this organization, this Council on Foreign Relations, which is a outgrowth of a Cecil Rhodes heritage. Cecil Rhodes, when he died, left his fortune to create a secret society. And in the United States, the branch of that secret society is called the Council on Foreign Relations. And in your country and in Great Britain and many other countries which are more closely aligned with Great Britain, it has a different name, usually called the Royal Institute for International Affairs. But in the United States, you know, the Americans didn't want anything connected with the word royal, so they changed the name, called it the Council on Foreign Relations. It's all the same group, different branches in different countries. And in any event, Quigley was the sort of the historian of this secret society, and that's what his book was all about. And he says very clearly that he is all in favor of it. He says he has nothing objectionable about it. You know, these are the people who are ruling the world from behind the scenes. He says his only objection was that they preferred to remain hidden from view. And he said, I think these people deserve credit for what they've done. I wish they would just sort of come out and be more open about what they're trying to do. Other than that, Quigley was totally on board. Quigley himself was a collectivist and believed in the goals of the New World Order based on the model of collectivism. And I, believe it or not, I'm really leading up to something here. In his book, about halfway through, Quigley raises a very important question. He says, how is it that we are the elite, of course, we who rule the world from behind the scenes, how do we allow the people, the masses, to have the illusion that they are running the world? They, you know, clamor for something called democracy. They like to think that they are controlling their own political destiny, and we have to give them the vote in order to keep them happy. But how do we give them this vote and yet don't give them the power to change anything? And he answers the question. He says it's very simple. He says all you have to do is just have two political parties, let them choose up between the two, and we control them both. Bingo. There it was. And that's the way the real world is today. And the unfortunate thing is that only about 0.01% of the population knows it.
Yeah, it's like a movie theater that has two entrances, one on either side of each other, and there's a person behind each door claiming that the thing behind their door is a different movie theater to what the other guy is claiming, but they only open one door at a time, so people would never know the difference.
Yes. Well, it's kind of like being a really a rich fellow, and you buy a baseball team, and you think, well, this is good. And then you decide 5 years later you buy another baseball team. I own two baseball teams. What happens the day when both teams play each other? Not too bad. You can't lose, can you?
Yeah,
pretty much the way it works.
Well, maybe is that why they just kind of hate everybody else, because they just can't lose and they just don't care. So it's like, hey, well, if everybody else, let's just kill them all and take over.
Yeah. Well, I think they do care. I think they have a definite plan in mind, and that's kind of where I was going in the beginning of my rambling monologue, is that they have written about where they want to go, and they do care. And what they're trying to build is a world government. They fondly call it the New World Order. But basically what it is a world government. But it's not just any old world government, certainly not based on the concepts of freedom or representative government. It's based on the concept of collectivism, which means that it's a top-down type of system where all the decisions are made at the top by the ruling elite, and the masses at the bottom are allowed to think that they're participating in their own political destiny, so they can't complain about everything. They say, well, we voted for our leaders, and so therefore he's our man, and we can't complain if he messes us around because we voted him in. But meanwhile, the decisions are not made by the people at all at the bottom. It's made at the top.
How do they kind of claim that it's collectivism if nobody collectively has a say about what goes on?
Well, the definition of collectivism has to be perhaps studied a little bit. There are only two major philosophies in the Western world for government. Now, in some parts of the world, you still have theocracy, where supposedly a government is being led by somebody who is the representative of God. And then in some primitive parts of the world, you may still have plain old barbarism, where there's no question about it. The guy with the biggest sword or the most guns, he rules and all of that. But for most of the Western world, we have this thing called democracy, and this idea is that, the majority should rule. So that's an important part of the equation. You've got to keep that in place in order to keep the people docile and happy and content with their lot. No matter how bad it gets, they can say, well, it's our government. It wasn't imposed on us. We did it. And so they become docile and manageable. So the whole trick is how to keep that illusion alive. And they do it by simply telling the people over and over again that everything is done for their own good. And that's the basis of collectivism is, one of the bases anyway, perhaps the most important, is that the individual is unimportant and the group is all important. The individual must be sacrificed, if necessary, they say, for the greater good of the greater number. See, now there's the trick right there.
The problem is that the group is full of nothing but individuals, so an attack on one is an attack on all.
Exactly. When you think about it, there is no such thing as a group. An amazing thought. The group really doesn't exist. There's no such thing. You can't touch a group. You can't see a group. All you can see are individuals. The word group is an abstraction. It occurs in the brain only. It's an abstraction. It's a concept for many individuals. Just like the word forest. Forest doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a forest. There are trees. You can touch trees, but you can't touch a forest because it's an abstraction. It's a mathematical concept for many trees. So when you say you're going to sacrifice individuals for the greater good of the group, what you're doing is you're sacrificing the only thing that really exists for something which is an abstraction, and in the end you wind up sacrificing all the individuals anyway.
Well, that's
quite right.
Completely insane then, isn't it? It's like this psychopathic mathematical probability mechanism that demands that all people be killed in order to suit a particular idea of what should be there.
Yes, and see, the rest of that trick is that once you convince the masses that, yes, the group is more important than the individual, then the next question is, well, who decides what's in the best interest of the group? Well, there has to be some leader, doesn't it?
And, well, I mean, I think the leaders should lead by example.
Yeah, right. Well, they never do. No, somebody has to be wise and make all these decisions because, you know, the people are too dumb. They would probably get it all messed up, they think. So they, the rulers, are the wise ones. They've been to school, and so they'll make those decisions for us. And so you're right back to the beginning of history where you've got an absolute ruler and the people are nothing but dirt under their feet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we trust these people implicitly, don't we? And what happens when you trust something that it has very, very dark intentions and certainly doesn't understand or care about, if that be the case, your particular situation, because they don't view you as a person or an individual. They see you as just part of some group that they want to, you know, do certain things to. So it lends itself to this kind of manipulation of morality so that anything that once was good is now flipped on its head and becomes actually a mechanism for doing harm.
Yeah, exactly.
Idea of protecting one from shepherding people or really trying to be altruistic in a way to try and make things move along in a very nice and pleasant fashion has instead gone into a nice and pleasant fashion for me, with everybody else being cut off at the knees.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's the old idea that the majority should rule, and that's what I was taught in school. It seemed okay at the time. After all, that's democracy. You know, I was bombarded with all those words. I didn't really understand what they meant. I certainly hadn't read any serious history at that time. So whatever they told me, that's assumed that was correct. And, you know, democracy is not such a hot idea after all, when you find out. Here in this country, when our founding fathers, as we call them, when they drafted the Constitution of the United States, they went to great lengths to explain that democracy is not what they wanted. And in fact, in their debates and in their private papers, they said democracy is the very worst form of government because it always leads to anarchy and mob rule and rule by elite groups, demagogues who can whip up the masses. And they said that the individual's rights and liberties are always trampled in a democracy, and they had it nailed. But nobody reads those old documents anymore. They're historic.
You know, that's the problem with our current society, is we've become so dumbed down and distracted by all the digital wacky thingy-do-do's that have just distracted everybody from actually researching into things and actually thinking about real stuff, you know, stuff that's actually happened, stuff that's actually important. No! But you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. This show is the lighter side of genocide, because if you lose your sense of humour about all this terrible crapola, you'll go friggin' nuts. And believe me, I should know. I almost went nuts before I discovered my sense of humour back again. Welcome back also to our amazing, fabulous, and various other nice adjectives special guest, G. Edward Griffin, coming at us live from the United States. Welcome back, sir.
Well, thanks a lot, Vinny. I love your sense of humour, and I have to be careful because I have a very bad one myself. And
you do?
I was thinking while you were saying that, it's a good thing you've... got your sense of humor because it's kept you from going crazy, and I was going to ask you, are you sure?
No, I'm not, actually. I constantly review the process, you know.
Anyway, but you're quite right. Yeah, you have to maintain a sense of humor, or you get very, very morbid in your thinking processes, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's kind of the idea that you might get a little bit freaked out if you learn too much information about something. Like, what if you found out that, I don't know, your father was a pedophile or something like that, you know, some real bad information that otherwise, you know, you would have been fine not knowing.
Yeah, there's that instinct. We just don't want to know if it's bad news. That's true.
But ironically enough, we do want to know if it's bad news, because everybody flicks on the TV the second somebody says live earthquake in Christchurch or live, you know, towers flying into the World Trade Center, terrorist attack on, you know. People do actually tune into tragedy, right? And I think it distracts them from their own tragic existence where they don't have any control over everything.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, it's the opposite way around. Everything has control over them.
Right, you are. Yeah.
And that's the essence of freedom, really, isn't it? Is being able to have some semblance of control over your life, you know, some semblance of independence. But it's gradually been eroded away now to nothing. I mean, back in the 30s, during the other Great Depression, I think we're about to head into an even bigger one, people mostly grew in their own food in rural areas and relatively self-sufficient. And now, most people live in cities, they aren't growing jack. Not even so much as a pinch of basil out of a can.
That's right. Yeah, that's so true.
And what's going to happen to all these people, you know? I mean, are we heading towards that long-talked-about global genocide? You know, is it currently in full swing? Like, have they just dropped the hammer here with this Japanese crisis, and then they're going to just launch all the others at the same time?
Well, there's a pretty heavy implication to that question, and if I understand it correctly, Vinny, are you suggesting that maybe the earthquakes and the tsunamis and all that were sort of engineered and not a natural process?
I've heard a lot of speculation on it. When the quake happened, I had Benjamin Fulford on the show. I'm not sure what you think of him, but he said that he had a conversation with a Japanese official the night before who warned him that there was going to be an earthquake the next day, and he recorded the conversation. But I didn't hear the recording, so I don't know. But there's possibilities and certainties in a lot of people's minds about it. Me, personally, I'm just trying to figure out the world. And my three favorite words are, I don't know. And my three most hated words are, I don't care.
Yes, very, very true. Well, we do know that I hate to say this, but our own government here, the United States government, has been working for many, many years to acquire control over technology of that kind. I mean, starting at the more sublime level, that they wanted to have control over the weather, and I think they have. I think by now the sort of black box agencies have figured it all out. They know how to control the weather pretty much, either by dumping certain chemicals into it and or interacting those chemicals with strong electromagnetic waves that can be generated from certain pulse points on the planet, such as up in Alaska, where we all know they have a huge array of antenna that every once in a while get flipped on and draw so much power that it just dims the lights in the cities around there. And not many cities, but the one that's there, that the lights go dim, and just millions and millions of watts of electrical power being pumped up into the atmosphere through an antenna array, which is laid out in such a way that they can selectively direct voltages to certain points in that array and therefore create a directional beam. They can direct it both up and down and left and right and that sort of thing. So what's going on? You know, they say, well, we're just doing research. They've been researching up there for, what, 15 years or so? Top
kind
secret.
Of like the you kind of like the same it. Kind of research that the Japanese do say that they're doing when they're doing whaling. Oh, we're just researching. Yeah. Spear them.
Yeah. It's all research, you understand, and that's why it's in charge of the military. I know that the military is well known for being a research organization.
Oh yeah,
and that's true, by the way. But it's always with one purpose in mind, and that's the military purpose. And that's the point. So anyway, I'm rambling, but the point is, we know that the United States government is not the only one. We know that China and Russia, for sure, have been engaged in quote research of this kind for many, many years. So when governments get to be huge and they get empire on the mind, they begin to think along these lines, and I'm sure that any one of those would love to have the technology to be able to cause an earthquake or a hurricane or whatever, you know. They would love to have it.
Yeah, well, I would assume that if you've got the power to create earthquakes, and I believe that there was even some kind of general or something saying to the Congress or whatever that they had tectonic weapons. And there's a lot of talk about it, and, you know, it seems to me that most cases, when there's a lot of talk about stuff, when there's a lot of chatter on the web, there's never nothing to it. There always has to be something to it, even if it's not the something that you thought it would be in the first place.
Well, I should make it very clear, having said what I did a moment ago, that I am not one who believes that I have any information that would cause me to think that the earthquake in Japan was, in fact, engineered by someone, because I just don't know. I'm just trying to say that I'm sure that the larger governments in the world would love to have that technology, and why would they love to have it? It's because they would use it. But then you get all kinds of questions of, well, why would any government want to use this against Japan and so forth? And you get into endless questions, and I don't think you can answer any of them.
Yeah, it was House Bill 2977, October 2001. Proposed a ban on the use of weather weapons, psychotronic weapons, and tectonic weapons, and all capabilities of HAARP, apparently. So, we had A.C. Griffith on the show talking about scalar weaponry, and HAARP now has just been reduced to an over-the-horizon sort of radar system, and scalar is what they do the damage with. And there's things that happen when scalar weaponry is used, like rainbow-coloured clouds, sonic booms coming out of the air, the appearance of sort of meteorite-type-looking things. And all of those three signs were seen above Christchurch in New Zealand before the earthquake happened. So there's just a whole lot of things about this, and we've had an investigative reporter on it too. So it's looking more than likely that not only have they got these weapons now, but they are using them, and they are in the process of doing with it. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Japanese earthquake was some kind of a trigger, a domino effect. These the New World Order, I find, really loves setting dominoes off, you know?
Well, yes. And since we're speculating on this too, and it is just speculation on this part of it, but
of course.
If you and I were in charge of developing systems like this, it wouldn't be enough just to have a bunch of scientists sitting around with blueprints and building a lot of funny-looking pieces of equipment. We'd have to test it, wouldn't we? We'd have to test it in order to know how to use it. And so it's possible, I think, that some of these things that are happening around the world are not necessarily happening because some region was targeted because we hate them, we want to conquer them or whatever, but, well, you got to test it on somebody, you know? And so let's throw a dart and see where it lands. Oh, well, let's test it over there and see what happens. I know that in terms of biological systems, biological warfare systems, that certainly has happened. In England, it's happened in the United States, where those governments have tested very toxic agents on their own people. They'll pick some little town, and they'll say, well, don't tell anybody, but we're just going to let loose these little germs there and track it and see how many people get sick and see how long it takes to get from point A to point B and so forth. They do it on their own people. Because they have to test it to see how, in case the day ever comes when they want to use it, really have to use it, they'll know how.
It's because they found a loophole in the informed consent laws.
Yeah, you might say a loophole.
A loophole that you can drive a truck full of viruses through.
Yeah, right.
You know, the psychopathy of government and the psychopathy of intelligence organizations, businesses, and all of these sort of things, which have essentially, they've all amalgamated together in some way, shape, or form, like this enormous organizational human transformer, where it's all kind of come together to this one enormous, giant, corporate, political, military, industrial beast to enslave humanity.
Well, I'm glad you're laughing on that, Vinny. You got me scared to death because I think you described it pretty well. I never thought of this monstrous thing as being a huge transformer, but that really is what it is. I think what we're dealing with here is a division of the human race into two classes. There's the predator class that we're talking about that always have an affinity to each other because they support each other. In one way or another, they may have different, slightly different goals, but they're all predators, and so they may fight with each other for turf or dominance, but they'll certainly work together to enslave the other class, which is us. Unfortunately, we're far more numerous than they, but we don't have any power. The predators know instinctively that in order for them to succeed, they've got to reach for power. And the greatest source of power in our world today is government. So predators always instinctively move into government, and that's where they are. The guy said, well, the bank robber was arrested, and somebody said, "Why do you rob banks?" And he said, "Because that's where the money is." And pretty obvious. And so you say, why do predators go into government? And it's because that's where the power is. That's where they can be predators and do it legally and not be punished for their crimes.
Oh, yeah. They get off on it and they get away with it. You know, you can't ask for better than that.
Yeah, right.
You know, and this is the thing about laughing about it is because it's so terrible. Technically, there's nothing you can do right at this particular moment. And laughter is the strongest form of denial that's known.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you've got it mastered there.
I think I've figured something out, but I could be wrong. You know, my belief is, my strong belief is that everything I know to be true is in fact wrong. All right, I just haven't seen the evidence to disprove it yet. I mean, that's my basic assumption. Until somebody proves wrong what I'm thinking about with some decent info, I'll just keep kind of going on that rudder, but very tentatively. You know,
of course,
I don't want to go fly off the handle and go absolutely freaking nuts. I mean, my goodness, I might take over the country and force it into a fascist dictatorship. Wouldn't that be lovely? Oh, wait, we've got that one anyway. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is G. Edward Griffin, and we will be right back after the break with more.
Well, there's only one thing I need.
Feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations. I'll let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations. Have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite. By satellite.
Welcome back. And I can end the planet in a holocaust because I can just do it that way. Yeah, one thing that we really kind of have to, come to grips with as a free humanity is to realize the kind of scum that hate us because we're free. And not in the way that George Bush says it, you know, oh, those terrorists, they just hate us when they're free, because those terrorists don't freaking exist. In fact, most of the ones that died in the towers are still walking around somewhere, still flying airplanes and pumping oil and stuff like that, suffering identity theft. But at the moment, what we really have to be conscious of is agendas that are in play. Okay, who benefits from what incident, where and how it happens? All of this is something that the average person should know, because if the average person knew all this stuff, it wouldn't be going on, because they would be subject to the bright lights of publicity. G. Edward Griffin, welcome back.
Thank you, thank you.
What do you think about that? I mean, is it possible, right, as an alternative media, as a patriot, as a truth movement-ish type person, to get this information out there to such effect that we can literally see the results coming back at us, resulting in legislation or actual progress? I mean, just in recent years, other than my videos and my radio show and all of that, I mean, my personal interest is to try and, I don't know, create some sort of a change in society, but I don't see that change. I mean, I see statistics of my work and all of that, but I don't see any change going on out there. What about you?
Well, Vinny, I think that there is change going on, but it's so frustratingly slow that I certainly share your view. I wondered sometimes, after having spent, 50 years of my life on this, whether or not I've really done anything. But when I look back and I consider what things were like out there back in the 1960s, the beginning of 1960, when I first, my flame got lit, and I started to frazzle and burn all over the place and trying to wake people up and shed some light. Nobody knew anything and didn't want to know, that life was too good. What are you talking about? A problem? Who, us? We'll never have a problem. Look how great life is. Business is booming, and we're having a lot of fun, and so forth. And then I look at it today, and I realize that there is really a ground-shaking awakening going on. Now, unfortunately, I think the reason for that is because things are beginning to go sour. I think had life continued without any ripples and no economic problems of any kind, no acts of terrorism or assumed acts of terrorism, and without any of these great crises that you were mentioning earlier before, it's possible that the people would still be pretty much in a state of slumber and not particularly wanting to wake up. But that's not the way it is. So I kind of look at it as though we're watching two opposing forces, and something's got to give. I think we're coming to the tipping point. And I think that the worse things get, and I'm certainly not hoping for that, but I see that it's going to get worse, I believe. The worse things do get, the more people will wake up and say, what the heck caused this? And they'll take an interest. For the first time in their lives, they'll take an interest in some of these big issues. But the big question then is it too late? Will it be too late to do anything about it? Boy, I wish I knew the answer to that. I'm counting on it not being too late. But there's one more thing I'd like to, observation I'd like to make on this, and that is I think that we get unrealistically impatient. We want to see change now. Here in the United States, people say, can we turn this around by the next election? You know, that's the focus point, the next 2 years or the next 4 years. And I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, it's taken 100 years or more to unwind the system. I don't think you're going to wind it back up and get everything back in place in 2 years or 4 years. We have to have the long view of history. And once you focus on that for a while, and you say, darn it, I wish that weren't true. But finally you say, okay, the long view of history is what really counts. Maybe I won't see it all straightened out in my lifetime, but my grandkids probably could. And if I do my part, and then my kids do their part, and then the grandkids do their part, we can turn it around. And if we have this longer view of history, and it's not just me, 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 and how does it affect me in my lifetime, then things begin to level out a little bit, and it becomes more gratifying to see little changes take place. Put in one stone, one foundation stone, just one, but it's one, and it's right next to the one we put in a few months ago. So now we've got two. Now we can have to look ahead in our minds and think how wonderful it'll be when there's a whole edifice built upon those stones. Once you get used to this kind of long-range thinking, it becomes very satisfying. And it becomes very clear to me that we have already won. It's just a question of time for the world to figure it out.
Well, that's exactly what I say, is that we've already won and we're just going through the motions here. And essentially, it's going to be like a bowel movement type motion, you know, where everybody's going to go through an awful lot of stuff that you wouldn't wish to be poured on them. Hey, but it's going to happen anyway. And the concept of waking up on time, I don't think it actually matters. If you wake up, you wake up, and that's the right time for you, you know?
Well, that's right. You can't unring the bell. You can't go back. Once you get the picture, you'll never not get the picture again.
Yeah, and I think that the impatience that we have is due to the importance of the situation, which you can only discern if you do take the long view of history. My very special guest is G. Edward Griffin, coming at us live from the United States. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future in New Zealand. We're a day ahead of you here. And you can check us out at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, joining us in the chat room there. We certainly appreciate everybody who contributes to this show in any small way that you can to keep it all going, because hey, what else would we be doing? Thank you very much. Check out the gorillamedia.co.nz. We'll be back next hour from a little bit more from G. Edward Griffin at gedwardgriffin.com, and check us out on YouTube at Mr. News Gorilla Media. Check it out. Back in a moment. Divided we fall. Welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Probably the best show that we've ever done so far. But that's not saying much. My very special guest joining me live from the United States is author and documentary filmmaker G. Edward Griffin. Absolutely astounded. And delighted to have him on for the full 2 hours today. Welcome back, mate.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Now, important issues of the day. What are people supposed to really do about these particular crises all coming together? I mean, is it just about kind of hunkering down and getting everything sorted right now, to, like, bug out positions, food supplies, you know, detached energy? What should people be doing right about now?
Well, I really like that question. I think it depends on who you are, what your personality is. You can be totally passive and defensive and say, well, nothing I can do about it. Things are happening. I'll just have to hunker down, as you say, and protect myself and my family, get my guns and my groceries and head for the hills or whatever it is. Just be defensive and hope that somehow you're going to survive all this. I don't mean to really belittle that, because you do have to think in terms of defending yourself and your family. But in all honesty, I don't think that will really solve the problem. If you're looking for a long-term solution, which is the only real solution, you've got to take the initiative. You've got to take the system back. You've got to not just be wringing your hands. You have to go into politics. You have to recapture control of the power centers that are now in the hands of these collectivists who are running the show. We've got to recapture the ship. The ship has been captured. The captain has been thrown in the brig. These guys running around with the uniforms running this ship that we're on, they're not the original crew. We've got to replace them. And so that's the reason, Vinny, that some years ago I formed an organization called Freedom Force International. And the whole purpose of this group is to recapture control of the power centers of the respective countries that we're in. We have members now in 68 different countries. And the goal is the same, the problem is the same, the solution is the same. And that is to get back in there where the decisions are made, and we're the ones that should be making the decisions. Up until now, all we do is write letters to our elected representatives, and we sign petitions. Maybe we'll send a little check into somebody that seems like they're doing a good job. You know, like, oh, well, we'll do our little part. No. We have to devote our lives to this thing. We have to become really serious about taking back the system. And we have a project as part of Freedom Force now. We call it Project City Hall. And I'll give you the reason for that. First of all, I should back up a bit. We have the official slogan of Freedom Force International. It's in Latin. It's Impotentes Defendere Libertatem Non Possunt. Well, translated into English, that simply means those without power cannot defend freedom.
Exactly. Those without power cannot defend freedom. G. Edward Griffin is my guest. He's a man who draws a lot of support from many truth movements and various other people alike. And we'll be right back after this short break.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print a handy buck and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan but don't...
Welcome back to the show that's all about charging interest on loans. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room if you dare. My very special guest for the duration of this hour is G. Edward Griffin, the author and filmmaker. And basically, if you wanted to sort of point a stick at somebody who's at least made an enormous amount of impact in terms of getting the truth out to the masses, it's G. Edward Griffin. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thank you.
Yes. Now, it's important to realize who you are because then, of course, it gives you credibility, you know? Because, you know, there'd be some people out there, and correct me if I'm wrong, what does the letter G actually stand for? A friend of mine wanted to know. I assumed it just meant gangster.
Oh, don't I wish I had something that exciting in my name. No, it stands for George.
George.
Yeah, but okay. My father's name was George and my grandfather's name was George, and so that got a little monotonous.
Yeah, okay. I can see that happening.
Yeah.
So we wanted to sort of break down for people, what is it that is going on with the current state that is ruling society? I mean, and by this I mean particularly the issuance of currency. Now, if you're listening to the song just there before, it talks about they print $100 and loan it to you, but they don't print the interest on the loan, so there'll never be enough to pay off all the debt. This sleight of hand kind of magical printing process, which is basically enslaving everybody. A lot of people don't understand exactly how that works. I was wondering if you could just kind of explain in a nutshell how the issuance of currency equals control over people's lives.
In a nutshell, well, I hope it's a big nut here because that's a tough one to do. In, you know, to do accurately and to do quickly, but I'll give it my best shot.
How about a coconut shell, then?
A coconut shell. That sounds alike. It's a little bit better, yeah. Well, first of all, let's start with how does money control people? I think that's the easy part of it. We are economic animals. Almost everything we do in the way of providing or consuming goods and services is done through an exchange with money. So everything of importance in our lives, well, take that word importance out of it, but everything of economic value to our lives is done through the medium of money. You know, how well we live, what we eat, what clothes we have, how well we can educate our children, what kind of houses we live in, everything. So, and people will do almost anything for money because money represents the ability to command the services of others. The more money we have, the more services we can command from others. So that's, you know, this is pretty basic stuff. If you have an offer to be employed by a corporation and they're going to pay you substantially more than you're now earning, and especially if you're living kind of on a tight budget, you might actually, most people would consider going to work for that company and accept the offer, even though they may not approve very much of the company or the guy they're going to except as the boss. They may think this guy is awful. I don't want to work for him, but boy, that offer of how much money they're going to pay me, maybe I ought to do it. So people make compromises in return for money. And I've known many people that have worked for corporations that really don't think much of the corporation at all. That they think it's unethical. They don't like the culture in the corporation. They don't like the management style. Maybe they don't even like the product or service of the corporation, but they spend their lives working for it because that's the way they earn their money. Well, so that's the easy part. People will do almost anything for large amounts of money. But now, how does that give the ruling elite the ability to control our lives? This is where it really gets interesting. It does so because it allows huge amounts of money to go into the pockets of those individuals who become the managers and directors of the power centers of society. And that is what controls our lives. In other words, if we're working for a corporation, and the guy at the top of the corporation, the president and the vice president and the board of directors and so forth, are making huge amounts of money, they're going to pretty much not going to rock the boat and convert that corporation into an ethical corporation overnight. Maybe I'm not saying this correctly, but just imagine, I'll give you an example. Imagine we're talking about a large pharmaceutical company. I think by now, almost everybody should recognize that pharmaceutical companies have a horrendous track record. Time and time again, we find after some tortuous investigation that the company developed a new drug. They knew that it was toxic. They had all the research on it, but they buried the research, and they kept looking for new researchers to do new studies until finally they found one that said, hey, this stuff is perfectly safe. And that's the one they published, and they buried all the others. This happens so many times, it's really the custom and not the exception. And so now just imagine how many people working for that company are aware of that. There are a lot of people are aware of that. Do they resign? No, they don't. Because it's their paycheck. It's their business. And so when a guy is appointed to the board of directors of this company or he's hired as an executive, does he say, hey, guys, we're going to change all this. We're going to release the real report because we don't want innocent people dying. To heck with the profits. Let's show some ethics here. We don't want to kill people. That way they'd be knocked out of that corporation so fast it would make your head swim. And so they remain silent. This is what I'm trying to say. Money at different levels affects people. They remain silent because they don't want to challenge their income stream. How many times have I heard people say, gee, I sure agree with you, Ed, but you know, I can't stand up and make that stand. Well, I'd lose my job. or a-
Well, hey, that was another thing. One of my listeners, Lars, I think, he sent me a message, and this is what it said. He talked about how the water is now being contaminated in the Gulf of Mexico, right?
Yes.
And the guys in the filtration business, like the cleaning up water business. Mm. So he said, "Oh well, you know, it doesn't matter that all the water's really, really bad and is going to kill people in the Gulf. It just means that there's more work for me."
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, they promote that guy to president. You know, he's got the right mindset.
He's got the right stuff. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens, and. So you control people through money, and it's a hard thing to say, but it's true. Now, if you get into the banking fraternity and you have the ability to create money out of nothing, which, of course, all central banks do, and the Federal Reserve System in the United States is a central bank, and you have one there in New Zealand, the Bank of England is another one, and all the countries have their banking mechanisms, which people think are government agencies, but they're not. They're really private banks, and they have been given the monopolistic power by their governments to create the nation's money out of nothing, just out of nothing. It's an incredible situation. Now, how much power does that give those who can create unlimited amounts of money? Here in the United States in the last year, we had an event there, I guess a year ago, where they created, I think it was $700 billion or in one day. It turned out that was not it at all. It was $13 trillion, and they didn't they hit it all. Well, now, where did that money come from? It just came out of thin air. Now, if you've got the ability to create that much money and then give it to anybody that is a friend of yours, and here's a loan or a bailout or a stimulus package or something, whatever you want to call it, you have the ability to control the loyalties of those people who are receiving the money. That's it in a nutshell.
It's called bribery, people. And if you've got unlimited money to bribe people with, there's no limits to your bribery. All right.
That's about it, yeah. So it's so simple, and it's so simple that many people cannot believe it. They think, oh, it couldn't be that way. Then no, it has to be more complicated than that. And in fact, it's not.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another conversation I have with people sometimes. I think, you know, you've got to keep it simple, Vinny. You know, you don't want to get too complicated and all off in fairyland. And it's like, well, you know, I may be a conspiracy theorist, but you're a conspiracy fairy. Now, F off. You know, let's get real here. This is a very dangerous situation. Any way you slice it, we got a criminal banking elite full of the worst types of debauched, even to the point of being sexual and occult-type people in charge of the freaking planet with all the resources and money that God can dispense.
Yeah.
Because that's what you turn yourself into when you are able to create something of value from nothing.
Yeah.
You turn yourself into God. And when a human being thinks that they got a God complex, they do things like burn down Rome.
Yeah. You're right on target. And, you know, this isn't really a conspiracy at all. Everything we're talking about, Vinny, is right out in the open. This is not hidden. The ability to create money out of nothing, they call it monetizing the debt. They give it a fancy name. They write textbooks on how to do it. Every banking employee at the higher level, at least, knows how it works. Students studying money theory read textbooks and they pass examinations. They know how it works. There's no conspiracy here. It's just right out in the open. It's entirely legal. That was the reason for passing the Federal Reserve Act here in 1913. They made it all legal. So there's no conspiracy and there's no theory. This is just the way the world works.
And I think that sometimes when you realize the way the world works, you wish that it didn't work that way. But unfortunately, it does. So then you have two choices. You can either A1, adjust to the way it works, or B2, change the way it works. Or at least freaking
try number
trying.
Let's try number two.
Because number one, you won't be around to change anything because you'll probably get exterminated.
That's right.
You know, it's like, you know, here's door number one and door number two. Door number one leads nowhere. Door number two leads possibly to safety. You know, make your choice now. Yeah. Certain doom or possible doom.
Yeah, number one leads to slavery or death. Number two is darn hard and dangerous.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go for number two.
You know, it's a crappy cake any way you slice it.
That's right. But, you know, Lenny, why are we here? You know, why are we put on this planet? Don't we have some purpose? Is it just to sit around and watch things happen and pass judgment, or are we here to make things happen?
Well, yeah, I'd probably say we're here to make things happen, because after all, as soon as we decide that we're going to make things happen, they happen.
Yeah.
You know, and some people kind of sit back and they go, oh, no, there's nothing really going on there. It's actually, you know, it's a waste of your time. Perhaps you should, you know, do something more productive. This isn't going to work, you know. The naysayers and the people who don't believe as I believe. Those kind of people. It yeah. doesn't matter what they say to me, because you can have a look at what I'm doing and have a look at what they're doing, and you'll see two distinct differences.
One yeah, they sleep. They sleep better.
Yeah. Well, that and I get a lot done, and they don't. You know, it's like somebody who knows about one particular computer program about how to make videos comes up to me. Okay, and says, hey, you know, you don't know what you're talking about because you're not using this program. And I go, how many videos you made? And they go, oh, like two. And I say, okay, I've done 300.
Yeah.
You know, and they accuse me of not knowing what I'm talking about.
Have you really made 300 documentaries?
No. 300 YouTube videos. Some of them are like basically mini documentaries.
Okay.
Things like that, 10, 15 minutes in length sometimes, and also film a lot of public meetings around my community and upload them to YouTube, so people who can't make it to the public meetings can at least view what they're talking about. These are things.
Well,
like
congratulations. That's exactly what everybody needs to strive to do.
Yeah. Well, and that was what I really started doing, and it was interestingly enough, I was inspired by American patriot movements and radio shows and all of that to do what I'm doing today. And I started that about 3 years ago. I quit my job working for a large telecommunication company and took my $11,009 worth of mall vouchers, and I went and I bought myself a computer and a camera. And I started going out, interviewing activists, filming protests and public meetings, uploading them for people to see, making little mini documentaries out of them. And now I'm doing the radio show as well. And, yeah, basically, I get to talk to G. Edward Griffin, you know. That's how that turns out, because I decided, you know, because I decided that I'm going to do it anyway, you know. And it doesn't matter what people tell me that I can't do, because, you know, me and my producer have a saying, I'm doing it any effing way.
Right. Well, that's exactly what we need more of. And, you know, in along those lines, there's another consideration that I think we need to keep in mind, and that is that not everybody is capable of this sort of thing, and that doesn't mean to put them down or anything. Some of us have more of a crusader instinct than others, but everybody can do something, you know. And as long as we do everything that we can do that's consistent with our aptitude and our situation, we have to do something. Now, whether it's being out there in the forefront or supporting somebody that's out there in the forefront, it doesn't make too much difference. In fact, I think before the last break, I started to talk about City Hall, and I mentioned the official motto of Freedom Force, which was Impotentes Defendere Libertatem Non Possunt, meaning those without power cannot defend freedom. Well, we have an unofficial motto, too, which goes something like this. Don't fight City Hall when you can be City Hall. And that is what is behind our project City Hall, which is now underway. We're providing training for anybody that wants to run for office. quit complaining, quit whining, get out there and run for office, anything. Run for your city hall, your council, your board of education, dog catcher, whatever it is. Get out there and start reaching for influence within the community so that you can have a voice in where the community and the nation is going, instead of just observing it and complaining about it. So I think this is very important. And for those who cannot actually do that, they can find somebody who can and then support them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you are a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, you can fight or you can support someone who fights for your rights.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Check out the articles and the video we have there with George Heminger about the approaching radiation cloud on the United States. Back in a moment. G. Edward Griffin.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. And incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, broadcasting live from the future. It's a criminal empire out there, and we have the head Don himself, G. Edward Griffin, on the line. Welcome back.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Godfather.
you know what's funny sometimes is that I think about characterizations of these evil New World Order folk, you know, as if they're some kind of cartoon-like criminal,
yeah.
You know, some grave stereotype.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is I think they actually are. But they look so much like everybody else.
Yeah, they do look and sound like everybody else, and even more so. Most of the, I think the people who we associate with the key positions, you know, the ones that we see in the news and before the congressional hearings and so forth, they've developed a lot of polish. I mean, the Geithners of the world and the Greenspans and the Bernankes and so forth, they got quite a bit of polish. And if you meet them at a cocktail party, you'd probably be impressed by them.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that in the American Medical Journal, I believe they defined a psychopath as somebody who is very nice in person and personable and that kind of thing, but they often have no real depth to their personality, and they don't have very many long-lasting relationships or long-lasting friends, things of that nature, and their associations with people are usually strictly through business, and it's the only reason they can keep connection with one another, because there's that, because they don't really have any real brotherhood or chivalry behind the scumbaggery.
Scumbaggery, yes. Well, I guess that's true. Fortunately or unfortunately, whichever the case may be, I've not been able to meet any of these people close up and personal, so I really don't know.
Well, I've ambushed quite a few of them, like Helen Clark, who's now number three at the UN. When she was, you know, we dressed up like real idiots, you know, like with press shirts and things like that, you know, like young wankers, basically. And we fit right in. it was when she was getting some award, a double doctorate honorary award for law. Right? This is somebody who tried to pass a law in this country that would basically outlaw vitamins as a supplement.
Uh-huh.
And then she magically winds up in the UN after stepping down from her prime ministerial post. You know?
Yeah.
It couldn't be clearer that she's a freaking New World Order puppet scumbag. You know? And this is the thing. People believe that their leaders are infallible. They believe that they are incapable of being corrupted. They believe these things so blindly that they will fight to defend them even as they're being stabbed in the back. And that's the real tragedy of it all. And maybe that's what the book Tragedy and Hope is supposed to symbolize, you know? All the hope we have is overshadowed by the tragedy of people supporting people who don't support them.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Well, I don't know what tragedy and hope meant in terms of Carol Quigley, but I think he was talking about the tragedy of all of the injustices of the world and the unequal distribution of wealth and all of the things that go contrary to the collectivist utopian dream. And the hope probably was that someday they would have a new world order and it would all be nicely controlled by a few people at the top who had it all figured out, and all those bad people at the bottom who might disagree could be eliminated humanely, of course.
Yeah, well, and this comes on to the chemtrail issue, and one of our listeners he sent your documentary to the Kansas City Health Department, and they wrote back to him, "I am not aware of any public health consensus on the health risks of chemtrails, or for that matter, even one scientific/public health body that has elevated this to the level of many other public health issues that do warrant immediate action above our present levels of response." So it's basically, good day.
Yeah, that's about it.
I love those kind of automated responses. I mean, do they have that like written down as a thing, or do they actually have these automaton type Borg half cybernetic women behind the desk kind of punching this code into the computer?
Yeah, I think there must be some kind of a cretin crowd that travels around and does this in the middle of the night. So when you make your phone call in the morning, that you get these responses. I don't know. I have to check into that one.
Yeah, well, in your studies of genocide and taking over humanity and all of this terrible stuff that we know, what's the most hilarious thing that you've seen?
The most hilarious thing? Let me think. Let me put that on subconscious mode for a moment. Hilarious. Let's see. What's hilarious? Well, I don't know. I guess it's a category rather than an event. And I think you nailed it, is when these people start humming and hawing and fidgeting and dancing and moving around to avoid dealing with an issue and coming up with all of these canned expressions. The favorite one of which is, of course, we are aware of no information that would indicate that anything is wrong. That's the standard answer. I guess that's pretty hilarious because you know that, not in all cases, but certainly in many cases, these people know full well that they're covering something up. But as we mentioned before, why are they covering it up? Because they don't want to lose their jobs. They don't want to lose that cash flow. So they prostitute themselves and their integrity, and they come up with these canned phrases. I don't know that that's really hilarious, but maybe that's the best we could say for it.
Well, no, you know, how it actually is funny is that you saw it coming, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like you call up these call centers, and you know what they're going to say before they say it. And when they do say it, you have that repetitive... You know how some people have these kind of tics, you know? And as soon as they hear one particular phrase or one particular way of saying something, you know this person's brainwashed, and the tic for me is just...
I just thought of something that really was hilarious. You know, we did this... video documentary that you mentioned, and thank you for that, called What in the World Are They Spraying, having to do with the chemtrail phenomenon. And one of the places that the producers went was to a pristine area in Northern California where there's a volcanic mountain called Mount Shasta. I don't know what its elevation is, but it's probably, I'm going to guess, 12,000 up to 14,000 feet. Big high mountain. It sticks up there. You can see it for 100 miles away. You know, if you're flying, there it is off in the distance. Covered with snow most of the year, of course, in the wintertime, it's covered with snow way, way down to the close to the bottom. Well, make a long story short, they had water samples taken of the snow, the melted snow from Mount Shasta that goes back over quite a few years. I don't know why they would do that, but they have them. And they compared the chemical analysis of what's in the snow now as compared to 20 years ago. Well, there shouldn't be anything toxic in that snow up there. It's so far away from an industrial area. There's no smokestacks within 1,000 miles. All the debris from Japan doesn't come over there, and from China, I should say. And so it's out there all by itself. And what you'd expect in snow up at those elevations is nothing but water. And that, indeed, is basically what they found 20 years ago. Now, more recently, they found extremely high levels of aluminum, barium, and strontium, all of the things, exactly the same things, that these engineers, geoengineers, have been saying that they ought to spray on the planet in order to control the weather. Those are exactly the very compounds and minerals that they've been talking about. So all of a sudden, they show up, especially aluminum. So when this was brought out in the film, we got a letter from some so-called scientific group saying, well, don't you know that up there on Mount Shasta, they have skiers, and on the bottom of the skis there's aluminum, and therefore, that must be how the aluminum got into the snow. You idiot, don't you know there's skiers up there? Now, if that isn't hilarious, I don't know what it is. First of all, we checked it out. We thought, what if this sample was taken on a ski slope? Maybe they would have us then. Well, it wasn't taken on a ski slope. There was no skiing activity in that area whatsoever. But that is hilarious how people will go to such extremes to try and cover up the truth.
Yep. Well, I think it's more the fact that they think that you're really stupid. And so they make up the first even slightly plausible lie that they can come up with in order to distract you. Because they think that when, you're making this little documentary, oh, this person, they don't know what they're talking about, obviously. I'll just BS them a little. Yes. That'll be fantastic. And they'll just bugger off then. I won't have to hear from them ever again.
I think the truth is that when you run into people like that, they're not really answering us or the producers of the film. What they're doing is trying to put something into the public record that would be plausible denial. They're not interested in us. They know we know what's going on. But they're interested in the casual reader who might say, oh, how about that aluminum? And then they read that, oh, well, then I wonder if that's true. And so now they've completely pulled the plug on their convictions. They put a question mark, in other words, in there. And to finally, I think the goal is to get the average person to the point where they say, oh, I don't know. This is just too complicated. Maybe yes, maybe no. How would I know? Some people say this, and what about that? And they get confused. I'll go watch television and see Dancing with the Stars instead.
Dancing with your death partner.
Yeah. I really think that's the whole purpose, is to just throw sufficient plausible denial and questions in there until finally the average person gets so confused they just give up.
Well, the average person's been conditioned to be pretty nihilistic, I'd say.
Yeah.
And this is a difficulty. We are facing a deprogramming operation that has never before been envisaged, okay? We're talking about a humanity that has been programmed on very deep levels using sophisticated psychological propaganda techniques mastered by Edward Bernays and all his predecessors to basically make everybody believe in a form of reality that doesn't currently exist. And the basic point that we really have to get across to people is we have to change that programming. We have to replace it with something that's real, something that is actually attached to your world, so you don't feel so lost anymore. Once you feel an attachment to your community, your society, your country, your land, your food, your health, you get more power for yourself every day, and you can use that against those who would use theirs against you, okay? This is the point. We want to empower people to be strong, to be very, very resilient, because it doesn't matter how many crappy letters of response that deflect our questions we get sent. We're still going to be on their cases, and we're still going to be talking to people, and we're still going to be producing works to undermine everything that they say about the world, because it's all a big lie, and it is not worth people's time listening to it. my very special guest, G. Edward Griffin, ladies and gentlemen, is kind enough to give us a full 2 hours today. So, you know, I hope you're enjoying it. I certainly am as heck as am on the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Join us in the chat room there, and final segment coming up after this break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Oh, wait, hold on a second. We've actually got one more minute. G. Edward Griffin, we've got one more minute. What do you want to say to people right now?
Well, your comment made me think of that rather well-known movie, The Matrix. So what we're dealing here is the real version of The Matrix. So many people have been tied up to that network, and they're living in the illusion that they think is reality, and we're offering them the red pill. And a lot of them say, I think I like that blue pill better. Thank you.
I think the blue pill is a depressant, and the and the red pill's like an acid tab or something.
right. So,
you know, goodness knows what can open your mind and what can't. Who knows? It's a dangerous world out there, and not least for your mind.
Yeah, well, pass the red pills, please.
Yes. Pass them over here onto that end of the couch, please. That couch potato there needs a red pill. Yes, thank you very much. You're broadcasting live from the future, and we are ordering you to take your red pill now. You may feel some strange effects, but just remember, it's only a drug. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. My very special guest, G. Edward Griffin, joins us for the final segment of this rip-roaringly, fantastically awesome and various other nice adjective show. G. Edward, welcome back.
Thank you. I almost hate to leave this show, Vinnie.
Hey, I hate it that you're leaving too, you bastard. Now, well, you know, it was interesting. We were talking about what kind of ties us together as a humanity. You know how I think the person, Joan, is it, that helped to organise to get you on the show here. She was Australian and I was New Zealander. We have this kind of camaraderie, even though in general cases that Australians and New Zealanders would hate each other. But when Australians and New Zealanders are on the other side of the world and not just in Australia and New Zealand, we love each other.
You know, that's how it works, huh?
Yeah. And maybe it's the same with Canadians and Americans. You know, if you're living in the United States and living in Canada, oh, you hate your neighbors and all that kind of stuff. But if you both take a plane and you like meet in Ireland or something, you're like, hey, we're like brothers.
Yes.
You know, everybody's got this kind of double standard about who and what they care about.
Universal
and
truth,
quite frankly. Well, maybe the whole point is we're supposed to be a walking contradiction, because if you become a contradiction, it means that you can change anything about yourself, even if it disrupts everything that you were in the first place. Because I think being able to change and move with the times, or even make the times change in themselves, you know, Lord help us, that would probably be the best function for any human being, really. Because it gives you the power to manifest your own reality.
And also, I guess it means that if there's an apparent contradiction when in fact there is none, it means that we're not just mono-surfaced individuals. We have depth and complexity. And that what appears like a contradiction, in fact, is not. It gives us many facets of our personality and our interests, our talent, and that's what makes us human beings. And I'd rather be with a person who has apparent contradictions than one who just is, you know, looks like it's pure vanilla all the way through.
Well, and the main principle here is just being honest, right? You know, I mean, everybody F's up, you know, everybody makes mistakes. And, you know, some people try and if they bag you and they hate you for the rest of your life because you make one mistake. And it's just so silly. There's some real depth of value to the concept of forgiveness to the people who do you wrong. However, it doesn't extend to the people who aren't sorry.
Right. Well, you know, that perhaps leads to a good concluding thought, at least from my perspective. I've mentioned before that we have Freedom Force International, and we have members in 68 different countries. And it's the most amazing thing, Vinny, that here we have an organization with people from all parts of the world, all these different nations, all different cultures, all different races, all different ages, all different religions, all everything is so different about them, different languages even, and yet the one thing that binds them together is the affinity to freedom, affinity to something we call the Creed of Freedom, which spells it out in such concise terms that everybody can understand it. That's the glue that binds all of us together. And I would just like to leave that thought. If anybody wants to become part of that that group of change agents around the world that have this vision and work together to really make a difference in the world, not just complain about how bad things are, I hope they'll just take some time and come to our website. And that's www.freedomforceinternational.org. Org stands for, of course, organization. That's freedomforceinternational.org. I think you're going to like what you read and come on board and join with us. And, you know, together we really can change this world.
Yeah. Good place to leave it, but fortunately, we still have a little bit more time. So, so you know, postulating away is the key here sometimes on talk radio. So I'm just going to put in my two cents. I think that the reason why people's perceptions have been so warped is a lot to do with how powerful the media has become, how powerful the control over information has become. So if the brainwashing to be docile, to not get angry, to not stand up, to not actually look deeper into things, if that's the process that people have been conditioned to follow, then perhaps we need to create counter-brainwashing warfare to counteract that. Because if you want to have a revolution, you want to have a revolution in the mind, and so therefore you'd need to have a revolution in the media to facilitate that. And that's basically my goal. You know, I'd love to incorporate with lots of other media outlets out there to try and band together, because together we're very strong and we can pulse the same signals and promote each other's works. You know, it doesn't matter because, hey, it's not a competitive environment anymore. There's only one big group of people against us, and there's just us versus all of them. And we're not each other's enemies. We are on the same side here. And the infighting has got to stop. People have really got to pull together and just do things out of gifting. You know, just give somebody a banner on your website. Just give somebody 30 minutes on your radio show. Give time to other people, and you will receive a hell of a lot more back. And yes, so will humanity, for that matter. And yes, I'd like to thank you very much. I'd like to thank you for giving me your time, G. Edward. It's been my utmost pleasure and honor, sir.
Well, it has been an honor and a pleasure for me too, Vinny. So thank you so much, and best wishes for success to you.
Thank you very much. All right, there he goes, G. Edward Griffin, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to hear this show again, apparently there's a couple of people recording it and uploading it to the to the internet as we speak because they like it so much. So, yeah, we'll put it up on the archives ASAP, I can assure you. And you can listen again. Plus, we'll put it up on YouTube to Mr. News Guerrilla Media. So if you just search Mr. News on YouTube, we're right up there. And we'll be right back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen.